This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to another edition of Through the Smoke, a Miami Hurricanes football and recruiting podcast here on the 24/7 Sports Network. It is Michigan State Week for the Miami Hurricanes, and on Through the Smoke, we always respect our opponent. So we want to learn more about the Spartans, and we are bringing on Andrew Bell of the Press Quarters podcast. Andrew, on his own, went on the Through the Smoke message board and basically said, hey, I want to mix it up with you guys in a good way. He was very respectful, came at it right, and said, if you guys want to know anything about Michigan State, I'm here to answer questions. And he did a great job. So I PM'd him on the website and got him on the podcast here to give the listeners of Through the Smoke a better understanding of what they will see when Michigan State takes the field against Miami this Saturday. So, Andrew, thank you for joining the podcast. Tell us, I guess, a little bit, you know, I assume you're a Michigan State alum, right? Tell us about your fandom of the Spartans and all that good stuff.
Well, first I want to say thank you for inviting me on. I've been, our board was a independent website until 24/7 came along, and we have, you know, another probably 15 years of history before we joined 24/7 Sports. One of the nicest things about the network is the ability to go on the other team sites, and I've been a moderator and a writer for the site from time to time. Now I do a podcast with another member of the site, just for kind of fun. I've always just kind of taken it upon myself to go on the opponent's board before the game and say, hey, if you have questions about State, let me know. I always found I enjoyed the games more and more if I knew about what was to be expected. Hey, who is number five? Why is there a good number five on offense and defense like Miami has? So that's kind of the genesis of that. As far as my fandom, I fortunately come from a line of Spartans. My father's a Spartan. I have two aunts that are Spartans. I have uncle that are Spartans. I have cousins, my sister, all on down the line. So got to State in 2001, right at the end of Izzo's first trifecta of Final Fours. Yeah, I missed that. It was the next year, unfortunately, I was there for probably the worst period of Spartan football in quite a while, 01 through 05, where we had one win over Michigan and one bowl win in over five seasons, Bobby Williams into John L. Smith. But, afterwards, I ended up moving to Chicago and started grad school here. And as kind of a hobby, because I was broke, couldn't really go out much, I started doing some writing for the board, and some coaches were kind enough that were on our board to take me under their wing, kind of show me how, you know, really help understanding the sport, not just from a fan perspective. And as I began to appreciate more of how the game is played, the chess match, the matchups, not just, oh, he got smoked, you know, or something and so forth, or oh, lit up, or whatever the case, oh, he got burned, or, you know, big play, you know, actually understanding, oh, you know, this, you know, the motion brought the linebacker out of space. He took two steps the wrong way. The cutback lane was open, et cetera. I love it. It's my hobby. So I end up, I end up wanting to know more about the opponent. And then obviously, since I follow State closely, I figure fair exchange of information is only appropriate. So I got to say, I've had some great receptions. I've had some poor poor receptions from opposing fan bases. Miami's fan base has been, honestly, I'm not just saying that, I'm on here, really good. I mean, it's been really fun. I wish I was able to go to the game. I think it would be really fun to hang out with some of y'all. So
It's a good time.
It is. Yeah. Well, so I'm told. Never been to Miami. I know. How can I call myself an American? But especially with COVID now, and I, you know, I'm a kid, I can't really get down there. But it was really interesting to see your squad, because sometimes in these early big game matchups, big because it's two Power Five teams. I mean, I think you're 24th on in the poll. State's 29th. If you look at the also receiving votes, relatively close. It's supposed to be at least a decent game. Oftentimes, most years you play a couple cupcakes and then you have your big non-conference game. Well, your cupcake had a grenade in it in right. Alabama, which is look, State's played Alabama twice under Mark right. D'Antonio, and I think the combined score is like 86-7 or something. I mean, so there's no shame in that. So, and at Appalachian State, take the name aside, is probably, like we said, a top 40 team, certainly top 50 team. That's not a Youngstown State who MSU played last weekend. Northwestern's probably comparable most years to that kind of range. So MSU at least had a decent opening opponent. So I think these teams have kind of shown their hand early in a way that you don't usually get most years, which I think has added a little more to intrigue to this. And we were talking before, I'll tell you, at least before the season started, I looked at this as probably the no easier than the third hardest game on the schedule. They have to travel, they have Penn State at home, and then they have to go to Ohio State. And let's be real, that's all a different ballgame. And so, now it has as much to do with how MSU has played as Miami. I think the teams are more close than they were, I think, in my preseason mind. So it's going to be a fun afternoon.
Tell us about Mel Tucker, right? Because he's the head man. I know last year was tough for him. You can go into that as to why, you know, the COVID year, but that was even more so the case for Mel than I think any other first year head coach last year. But what have you learned about him? Maybe, you know, including these two games, what impresses you about him as the head coach?
Well, so the circumstances of his hire are unusual, to say the least. So if anyone's been really following college football over the last 15 years, Michigan State had quite a resurgence under Mark D'Antonio. He was the defensive coordinator during Ohio State's 2002-2003 victory over the Hurricane. Sorry about that. And at Ohio State, went to Cincinnati, came to MSU as kind of a no-nonsense, you run the football, stop the run, good defense coach, and really blossomed into, at one point in time, probably a top five coach in the sport. We had 5-11 win seasons in 6 years. Yep. And at one point, three straight top six finishes, including a Rose Bowl win, a Cotton Bowl win, and then a college football playoff appearance, which was the aforementioned like 38-7 beat down by Alabama because Bama. It is what it is. It is what it is. And that was tough. A few things happened down the stretch with the administration. There was a top recruiting class that came in that a couple of kids got into trouble for, not trouble, let me be frank about it. There was a sexual assault off campus that resulted in three of the top four players being dismissed immediately. Friction in the locker room. I think things some things were outside of the head coach's control, but later in his career, I think it was hard for him to recover from that. And then the Larry Nassar scandal has nothing to do with the football program directly, but gutted the athletic department as well as the president. And so when he probably could have, if he had some more institutional support and structure, probably could have course corrected, ended up kind of ending his career with, he had a 3-9 season in 2016 and then a 10-3 year, kind of a bounce back, but then back to back 7-6 seasons where the defense was fantastic and the offense, I mean, it was just painful. I mean, like 20 points a game, painful.
Right.
And the rumor was, and I don't know, it's been substantiated, that he wanted to coach in 2020. And then he had a successor picked out, found out that the university had hired a search firm Again, this is hearsay. And then because he resigned the day before National Signing Day in February of 2020, he had collected a $5 million longevity bonus about two weeks ago. And so everyone's like, okay, you know, he's going to stick it out. He had famously recalled shuffle the deck chairs, the Titanic, if that sounds familiar. He had changed the positions, like what each coached right. or something, you know,
move the wide receiver.
Yeah. And it just didn't work. And unfortunately, and the recruiting had kind of fallen off, and it just started to feel like someone that had been holding on too long. And I think probably before his time because of the things that were outside of his control. But I don't think he was good at handling, you know, when the recruiting picked up, he wasn't great, I think, at handling the egos that came with that or the expectations, which is a skill in of itself, I think.
Yes.
And he certainly went back to kind of overcorrected the last few classes and went for the, you know, the hardworking, someone that just makes football plays regardless of their measurables. So then just to, not to bury the lead, for the first time, I think in 80 something years, MSU didn't have an NFL player drafted. There were, I think, wow, it was MSU, Michigan, and like Southern Cal or something that had a player every year for that, like a lot, you know, that long time. And the streak snapped because the quality of athlete just wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's the backdrop. And I think anytime you have a legendary coach go out on top, they usually hang on long enough to, you know, look at Mack Brown at Texas, right?
Right.
Hung on, thought he could make it, kind of the talent drops off. So with that backdrop, again, the rumor was Luke Fickell at Cincinnati was D'Antonio's choice. Everything was done, but the signature on the paperwork. And at the 11th hour, he bailed, whether it was because the board of trustees couldn't approve the contract fast enough or Cincinnati up the ante, or which is crazy because MSU has a lot of money. Whatever the case may be, that fell through. And so Mel Tucker was one of the three finalists. He was the defensive coordinator at Alabama. I mean, that doesn't really mean much because, you know, the Nick Saban coach rehabilitation program that they run down there. But he wasn't, you know, he had a stint in the NFL. He had been defensive coordinator at Ohio State. He was actually D'Antonio's secondary coach during the championship there. And he's a defensive back from Wisconsin originally. That's his background. So Big Ten guy, but had spent a lot of time in the SEC. Kirby Smart had plucked him from Alabama to go be the defensive coordinator at Georgia. And then Colorado got him for a year, and then MSU doubled the salary. I mean, literally $6 million a year off the bat, basically doubled the assistant pool also on top of it. And I think made the coaching staff just a smidge right behind Penn State for the third highest paid in the conference.
Wow.
I mean, really, really manned up. And people don't understand that about Michigan State. I mean, they're a top.
Oh, yeah.
20 team in attendance and top 15 in revenue as an athletic department. I mean, there's a lot of resources in East Lansing. I mean, the stadium seats 75,000 and it's usually full, some at least ticket sales.
Right.
So anyways, I know that's a lot of background, but for people that haven't followed the team and they're thinking, who is this guy? Well, so he's a, you know, Saban disciple, but that's, you know, I don't want to bank too much on that because I think there's a lot of the Belichick effect where this assistant's the product of the system around him. So I was actually a little wary about him because, you know, being a Lions fan, Matt Patricia flamed out for the Lions, and so many of their assistants have gone on to kind of face plant. Saban famously not, but he did in the pros, but not in the Dolphins, obviously. I think you know about that. And so, you know, you're a little hesitant to take someone on that, you know, when you're such part of such a powerhouse, you know,
right.
Is it really their coaching acumen or is it just the fact that he's got more 5 stars than you do 4 stars on his team? So anyways, Tucker is known as a relentless recruiter, high energy guy. I didn't really know much about him, honestly. I don't follow Colorado football because who does? And nothing against the Buffs, but haven't really made noise in 15 years. And so we were, you know, wait and see. Well, he gets hired so late, COVID had started, basically.
Right.
He had 1 week to meet the team. He didn't even have his assistants.
Right?
No spring ball gets canceled. Ends up basically taking the offensive coaches from Colorado and keeping the defensive coaches from MSU. That was the that was the marriage. And then they Harlan Barnett, who was the defensive coordinator at Florida State for a couple of years, was MSU's co-defensive coordinator and defensive backs coach and an All Big Ten player and NFL safety for MSU, comes home to coach the secondary. So basically, in that, the D-line secondary linebacker and secondary coach with Barnett in place was basically D'Antonio's for the last like 10 year plus. So that, so they kept that kind of continuity from the old staff. I mean, they were all good. They're all good coaches. Sure. Mike Tressel's the linebacker coach, who's now the defensive coordinator at Cincinnati. And so Tucker brought his offensive guys, and it's, and then it's kind of like, okay, what do we do? Well, they took the tight end coach from Wisconsin, which produces good tight ends, and started making some more moves with the coaches. But the problem was, is there was no way to evaluate the roster. And that's really, that was really the genesis of the issues last year. You know, they went 2-5. The Big Ten started and stopped their season. So they got into fall camp. That's the first time there was no organized summer conditioning. They had a new weightlifting coach, actually from IMG. Jason Novak was the weightlifting coach there, and he came and came to state. And the prior regime, everyone, when someone takes over, it's, you know, the SNC is better than it's ever been before.
Correct.
You know, we're doing wind sprints backwards while juggling koalas or something, you know, something that's the next cutting edge ridiculousness. And, but one thing that did stand out was that MSU did not have a dedicated nutritionist on the staff, and Tucker addressed that right away. But they couldn't really get them in the weight room with this new, you know, weight coach situation. So everyone had to do stuff on their own. Several play, a whole chunk of the team got COVID, whether it was announced or not. And so you come into camp and you have a fall roster and you start implementing your schemes, which you normally would in the spring. You're trying to do that in the fall while teaching fundamentals, while evaluating whether these guys can play football at this level. And Tucker's philosophy on recruiting in the roster is he wants you to look like Alabama or Georgia looks. You want big physical, body strong body types. And I think that's, it's okay. Well, that's not too bad. His point, he has a good point though. He's like, you see a guy 5'9" that's going to play safety and hits out of the gym and you think, oh, he might be the next Honey Badger. And Tucker says, yeah, maybe the 1 out of 100 times he's the next Honey Badger and he's a star. But the other 99 times you're going to get burned. And if you take enough chances like that, you end up with a too small, too weak roster, et cetera. And kind of tacitly admitting D'Antonio took too many guys that made plays. You know, too many 5'11 linebackers, too many 5'9 DBs. And so they had 20, but Tucker didn't know that until they actually played in the fall. So you have this hodgepodge of rosters, no chance to hit the transfer portal because you don't even know what's out there, what you even have or what you need. And then the Big Ten shuts down. So then they go back to winter conditioning drills. Like, okay, I can still work with the team. We're not going to have a season. We're going to treat it like we would spring. Okay, get our spring back. Well, 3 weeks later, they're like, okay, Big Ten's back on again. You have 4 weeks to get ready. And it was just, I mean, a preparation nightmare. So they come out, they play Rutgers, which is, you know, I think we can all know it's like, you know, the Kansas of the, you know, the Kansas of the east of the Mississippi. And they commit not one, not two, not three, but 7 turnovers in that game, plus turn it over on downs 2 more times. And they lose to Rutgers like 37-21 or something. Just hurts your soul to say as a fan. And the team looks disjointed and sloppy and just terrible. And people are like, oh, you know, $6 million for this. You know, it's like, okay, well, you have no credit. It looks like a team's not prepared. Well, what happens the next week, they go on the road to Michigan. I know no fans, and Michigan was 13th and just pounded a Minnesota team that was coming off a big record, and they win. And they don't just win. They commit no turnovers. They outgame Michigan. They out-time and possess them. I mean, they all across just beat them flat out. And that got everyone's attention because, wait, this team just, you know, in 1 week, you turn around and they go to Iowa, which is discipline on steroids. Well, I guess probably not steroids anymore after their Robinosis scandal, but they get pounded a few times and then they come back after a unintentional bye week because I think Maryland or something had to cancel because of COVID. They play number 8 Northwestern, who had just come off, you know, they're fighting Reese Davises and they were They've just beaten Wisconsin pretty handily and looked to be very much in control of the Big Ten West, and which is great. And MSU, again, plays a game that's clean. And you're going, okay, that's great. And then they get smoked by Ohio State. And then the wheels kind of, they play Penn State tough for a half, whatever. And then a real offseason happens. And Tucker just starts, for lack of a better term, making moves. Sure. They 20 players transferred out. I think 14 transferred in, uh-huh, plus the recruiting class. And so they have like 34 new players on the roster this year versus last year. So on an 85-man scholarship roster, it's about 40% turnover in 1 year, which is incredible. Right. And because of the way the portal works, these aren't necessarily cast-offs. Quaverius Crouch, starting linebacker from Tennessee, who was a top 60 recruit at one point, Rivals, we can say that name, I think, had them as the number one recruit in the country as a running back, and he was starting linebacker for Tennessee. He's on State's roster. Kenneth Walker, who was maybe not a starter at Wake Forest, but certainly a big part of the rotation, productive college player, he comes in. They took Jarrett Horst, who's a starting left tackle from Arkansas State, who went JUCO to Arkansas State, and Lincoln Riley recruited him to go to Oklahoma for this year. And Tucker's supposed to be this great relentless recruiter, out recruits him. He's 6'6", 310, and all of a sudden you pick up half a dozen starters in one offseason. The
different team.
Two of the top three cornerbacks are from Florida and Alabama. And that doesn't mean that they're starting quality at their schools, but for a team like MSU, they're upgrades. And so the team isn't perfect by any means. They're not a playoff contender. They're not an eight win contender, but to go from a 2-win squad up, that the talent is, the talent was clearly upgraded. The other thing he did was, and this is much less interesting to your fan base. He took the number one high school coach in Michigan, who played at the University of Michigan, and brought him on the staff.
Okay.
And so at Cass Tech, which had produced a lot of talent,
Detroit.
Thomas Wilcher comes in to MSU. I mean, that's something that you just would never have seen. And he brought in Wisconsin's director of player personnel when they got Graham Mertz and were recruiting at that, top 20 level. Okay. This is the guy that was behind it. He said, I have 12 assistants in Tucker's program. Wisconsin gave me three. That's the level of dedication. The recruiting is picked up. It's in the top 20 right now, in a way that it'll probably end up in the top 30. But for a team coming off the record they're coming off of, he's really, there's been a lot of positive offseason development that people are getting excited about, so on and so forth. And so then the question is, what's going to come this fall, right? Because talk is cheap. And I've seen, in my fandom spanning now 20 solid adult years, there are plenty of rah-rah CEO coaches. I think PJ Fleck at Minnesota is one, James Franklin's one. And talks cheap, and those types can recruit very well. I think Tennessee, I keep beating up on them. I don't really like them, but they seem to go through, their share of carnival barkers that are, we're back, Butch Jones and all this, recruiting these giant, great classes. Can't coach their way out of paperback. Selling ice cream to an Eskimo or whatever the phrase is. But they aren't going to be able to put a coherent roster in place, or at least give up control to quality assistants to allow that to go forward. And what's been good so far is that the first two games for MSU look like a well-coached, coordinated team. Tucker's philosophy is not just on the size of recruiting. He doesn't want a team that beats itself. MSU the last couple of years under D'Antonio had a little bit of a personal foul issue, late hit out of bounds, roughing the quarterback. Halfway through the year last year, we had a nickelback named, I wanted to call him Shannon Brown, but he played for the Lakers for MSU. Jeez, Shakir Brown. Sorry. Jeez, I'm tired. And he led the team with five interceptions, led the Big Ten with five interceptions, one of the best playmakers in the defense. Well, he gets a tackle or something and then gets called for unsportsmanlike. and he literally the best player on the defense, and Tuck yanks him for a series because he's not going to let that, you just stopped him on third down, then you gave it back to them. You can't afford to make those mistakes. So through two games, there's been two turnovers, and they've both been fumbles by, you know, third or fourth stringers late in the game. You know, there really hasn't been much in the way of interceptions. There's been two total offsides penalties, ironically enough, both lining up in the neutral zone, which is kind of funny. But for the most part, you're not.
So the discipline is improving.
It's improving. And you're seeing the defense looks like, or really the offense actually looks coherent.
Right.
It looked like, okay, this is your philosophy. This is how you're setting up the run. This is how you're setting up the pass. This is how you're working the intermediate. This is why you're running the read option. It gels. Defense is still more of a work in progress, but at least I can see they run a 4-2-5 or a 40 nickel. It's whatever you want to call it these days. You have that, you know, hybrid position, right, safety, linebacker. You know, for MSU, it's number 7, Michael Dowell. He's, you know, 6'1", 215. Is that a linebacker nowadays? The safety? Right. Who knows?
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
If I had to pin you down and say, this is the, you know, you got to pick just one thing, but this has been the most pleasant surprise about this Michigan State team through two games. What would you highlight?
Offensive line play.
Okay.
MSU has had consistently an horrific offensive line. If you look at Pro Football Focus or some of the other, you know, the S&P Plus ratings or whatever the other metrics are, like we're talking 116th, 121st, right, you know, what they call adjusted line yards, which is how far does your, you know, how far could a running back get based on how the blocking set up? You know, and through two games, they're averaging 299 yards on the ground. They've given up a total of a sack a game, both in the opener, and one was the quarterback's fault for pulling the ball too long. That has allowed MSU has consistently for 20 plus years had enough B or above level skill players, receivers and receiving as running backs, guys that can run and catch. But the offensive line has really held them back for most of the last 15 or 20 years, consistently the weakest position on the team. And that so far looks to be moving in the right direction.
Would you say it's the tackles are the strength? Cause when you watch, like just watching, you know, Kenneth Walker's long runs, right? It seems like, you know, anecdotally, it seems like he's mainly going to the edges and getting around the corner, breaking those long runs.
Yeah, and I think he's certainly making the line look even better than it is. Okay. And I don't want to make them sound like it's, you know, Orlando Pace
out there.
They're
just better than you expected.
They're better than I expected. They're probably a B minus right now. Okay. And I think Walker really is an A player. I mean, I'm watching him make cuts and moves and the way he's setting up his blocks. I mean, he's really making the most out of it. But strength would be the left side of the line. Horst is left tackle, and then the left guard, JD Duplain, who is a high 3-star guy from Ohio that was one of Urban Meyer's last like late offers and tried to flip him about 3 years ago. 6'4", 305, can pull, can block. I think he's got like a top 10 grade on Pro Football Focus on pass blocking so far through the year. I think he's graded out as MSU's best lineman in plus overall. I think last year, just to give you perspective, the highest graded Pro Football Focus guy for the MSU offensive line was like a 67, which is terrible. And Duplain's got like an 89. Well,
Miami
now.
Would be happy with that grade, but
yeah. Well, I don't know. I think your line's coming around. Don't fault yourself for playing Bama and thinking that. But yeah.
So go left.
That's
what he was doing. That's Kenneth Walker was doing that against Northwestern, right? So. Mm-hmm. I think he started the game with a 75-yard touchdown, went to the left. I think there was a, you know, it was maybe inside the 10, maybe just outside the 10, bounced it left. So clearly he knows, or, you know, the play calling knows, go left. So
go left.
Tell me about, because, you know, Kenneth Walker, I think it's just obvious he's a stud, right? Everyone can watch the highlights. The guy who surprised me, Peyton Thorne, is kind of better, the quarterback. He's better than I expected. And look, I had no expectations about how good he would be, right? But just watching him a little bit, he's better than I thought he'd be. And honestly, tell me this too, because, you know, look, I don't follow Michigan State football at all, right? So when I heard Anthony Russo was transferring in, I just assumed the guy's, you know, he was a Temple starter, started many games there. I just assumed he's going to transfer to Michigan State because he's going to be the starter. Was it surprising to you that Peyton Thorne won the job?
No, because I had been on the Thorne bandwagon since last year. I think the board was kind of split 50-50, you know, our fan base kind of 50-50, because same philosophy, right? You know, you don't bring in a three-year starting senior quarterback if he's not going to start. But I kept saying the one thing I like about Not one thing I like a lot about Tucker. He's done a lot to make this fan base really buy in. And there's a lot of energy in the fan base with him. Best players play, period. He'll bench a, for instance, MSU returned their middle linebacker from last year, Noah Harvey. He's barely played because a redshirt freshman, Cal Halliday's better. And he starts in his place. And he's like second on the team in tackles or something. So when that came in, it was really because the last year's nominal starter, Rocky Lombardi, was terrible. He's now the quarterback at Northern Illinois.
He was really bad.
I don't know how, I mean, he threw for 10 yards an attempt and 3 touchdowns against Michigan, which tells you a lot about Michigan more than it does him. But Thorne is one of our Stephen Brooks, our beat writer, called him a game manager plus. And I think that's a pretty accurate way saying it. It's like, okay, you know, it makes sense because he's not just a conservative, make the safe throw guy. He can get around the edge and he'll make throws that are like, oh, that was a 15 yard out over the back shoulder, you know, back shoulder fade timed well on the sideline. He's not doing it consistently. He's only a redshirt sophomore and he only started one game last year. And this is probably, I mean, obviously you don't, why would you watch MSU versus Penn State last year, you know, a 2-4 team versus a 4-4 team or whatever Penn State was. But they do have the Nittany Lions have usually a fantastic secondary or a very good one. And Thorne went off in the second quarter through 3 touchdown passes. And we're talking rainbows into double coverage, like right pinpointing. I mean, it just was on. And then they, you know, sent, you know, their first round draft pick defensive ends at him. And that was that because he was only a redshirt freshman. But I said, look, you know, all you're looking for on a guy's first start are flashes, especially when they're that young. And that showed me a ceiling, or at least a young ceiling. His dad's a longtime coach, I think at a D2 school or D3 school or something like that here. So he grew up in the sport, or maybe he's a high school coach. He probably might know that better. But he played high school football with Jaden Reed, who's MSU's best receiver. And they actually, Reed had been committed to Western Michigan, was a freshman All-American, transfers to Michigan State. And then Thorne had been committed to Western Michigan and D'Antonio had pursued, I think it was CJ Stroud, honestly, or maybe it was someone else. And in the class before, I think I'm getting my classes mixed up, missed out on everyone. Like, okay, this kid looks like he can throw the ball a little bit and, you know, be at least someone we could maybe use. Comes to State and kept hearing as a freshman, he was kind of too skinny in 2019. And then last year, like, okay, let's give him a try. And then he showed enough for me to think, okay, natural progression for a redshirt sophomore having a little bit of experience. I think he can be a B player, I think, right now. And I think that's where he's at. And
tell me this, because when I watch him, right, you know, I'm not saying he's not comfortable throwing from the pocket, but to me, he seems most dangerous on like rollouts. Like when he's outside the pocket, he keeps his eyes downfield. He's athletic enough to pick up scrambling yards. He doesn't really do it, but he will get outside the pocket and find receivers downfield. Would you agree with that, or would you push back on that?
No, I think that's accurate. It's a part of his game. He's an evolving quarterback. This is only going to be his fourth start, so I think part of it is, and because there was a real quarterback competition. So he's split in first team reps, and I think people were a little nervous the first game. I think he completed 60% of his passes, you know, 185 yards, a touchdown, and he had 25 yards on the ground, which was nice. You know, 200 yards total offense, you know, didn't turn it over, kind of handled the game. He's a solid runner. He's certainly not Derek King. He's not a Denard Robinson or anything like that.
You have to respect it.
You have to respect it. And he can escape pressure and keep a play alive. And I think that's and he's heavy enough. And I give him credit for this. He doesn't quite have the arm talent yet to pull it off on the run, you know, like a Patrick Mahomes, you know, fall. I'm just saying that there's a style of play several levels above where he's at. But you see that. You see those elements. And I think he's probably most effective when he doesn't have to think too much as a young player. You let him get in a couple of quick throws, state will go tempo, and even in the rollout, but like just he's got a feel for the game. Some people just kind of have it as football players, and he has it. I know that's not really a technical answer, that's what you see. It's someone that's got a feel for what's going on. And one thing that's been impressive is that he's been willing to throw it away rather than extend a play too long.
Yeah. He protects the ball. Yeah,
he does. And so it's been encouraging, and that helps a lot.
Defensively, you know, tell us what we need to know in terms of like maybe the strength or the weakness of that side of the ball.
So it's been so the name of my podcast is the Press Quarters Podcast, because MSU ran a press quarter system, meaning your corners are up under D'Antonio, corners are up tight. It's very aggressive. It's basically a cover one all the time. Safeties are playing only 9 yards back from the line of scrimmage. I mean, it's an aggressive run stopping. It allows you to really effectively have nine in the box on almost every play. And you dare someone to hit a slot fade over you. Is basically to run and running in the, I mean, it, there's just never been, I mean, MSU was like top five in run defense for like six straight years or something. The evolution away from that, they did, the one guy Tucker didn't bring from Colorado was Scotty Hazleton, who was the defensive coordinator at Kansas State and had a lot of experience with the Big 12 spread. So he's got this 4-2-5 modified to, you know, modern, what I call maybe a modern 4-2-5 that's a lot more cover three and a lot more bend don't break, with the idea that with spread offenses, just don't give up the big backbreaking play, and then eventually the offense will make a mistake. Ironically enough, that's what Iowa runs. They just run it better with more, you know, people are more established in the system. It's almost the exact opposite of what the guys had been taught under D'Antonio. And especially last year, you saw a lot of people that were doing, honestly, the D-line was doing Tucker run fits, and the linebackers were doing D'Antonio run fits, and giant holes were opening up in the middle because people are going the wrong way. Less of that, but they're still getting used to the system. There just hasn't been a lot of time. I think it's really been implemented. So you're really seeing a year one of a true defensive philosophy change, and it's been okay. I don't like it because I think the Big Ten offenses don't warrant a bend. Bend don't break, except for like Ohio State. And what point? And at this point, you know, they do, maybe Penn State. But when you're playing a Wisconsin or an Iowa or, you know, some of the bigger, stronger teams, you're stopping the run and having those guys in the box. I mean, oftentimes you got six in the box against five linemen and a running back, one guy missing, and you're toast. And God forbid you pull a tight end around or an H back, you know, in a pro style look, and then you can get gashed up the middle. And that's been, you know, seeing the opponents run up the gut on MSU is not something I'm used to seeing. I see it more than I'd like to so far.
Okay.
The flip side is that the D line is actually pretty good, particularly the tackle. Tackles are good. They go five, they rotate, they play, they've played, I think, 10 or 11 defensive linemen in each of the first two games, rotating regularly, liberally. They play, there are five linebackers that aren't redshirt or that aren't true freshmen. They all play almost every game. So they do, because Tucker's trying to get game reps and game experience in the system. I would expect a tighter rotation against Miami. And I think part of the breakdown are that there's so many, there's been so much change up front. In that front seven or front six, the back five, counting the nickel as a defensive back, they don't rotate quite as much. So there's a little more coherentness, I guess, in the secondary, but it's still a bend don't break. In Northwestern, dinked and dunked. I mean, only like 6.5 yards an attempt, which is pathetic, right? But the guy completed 70% of his passes because everything was open underneath. Tackling is good, though. I would say they'll allow a completion, but not a lot of yards after catch. That's been encouraging too. So the defense is definitely a work in progress. I don't know what Hazleton's D will look like when it's done, but it's not done. It's not in its final form right now.
What do you feel like is the weak point of the defense? Like, from when you would look at Miami and you're like, okay, this concerns me maybe with what Miami can do.
So it's going to be the lack of a pass rush. There is not an organic bend the edge pass rusher on the roster, or at least not that if there's a true freshman, I haven't seen him play yet in that capacity. Hold on. Excuse me. So because of that, quarterbacks have had too much time on third and long. You know, teams like to rush four, drop seven, or, you know, maybe bring a linebacker, but still it's 5-on-5 against a mobile quarterback, a guy that can get outside. That's really worrisome. King is a playmaker. I watched him pick up some pretty backbreaking, you know, third and 11s, third and 10s against Appalachian State, or even second and 9, where he'd run for 11 or so, or 15 or something, just enough to keep the chain moving. And he's got a strong arm. He can flick it downfield. Cornerback play, they brought in Ronald Williams from Alabama, and everyone was very excited for him. You know, 6'2", 195, learned from Saban, and he got picked apart by Northwestern, which was really disappointing to see. Couldn't pinpoint the ball. He had come off a collarbone injury, his first live game action really since 2019. So I kind of get it, but still really kind of disheartening. So they turned last game to Chester Kimbrough, the Florida transfer, as one starting corner in place of Williams. He played much better. I think he allowed like 2 catches for 12 yards. And but the other corner, Kalen Gervin, was one of the few top 150 recruits on the roster. 5'11", 195 is, runs probably in that 4.4 to 4.5 range. Pretty fast. I mean, for our world, at least. He also has issues. He's a pretty good tackler, but he's making tackles because he's allowing completions, which is really frustrating. So getting off the field, I mean, I think they're allowing like 42% of third downs converted against them, or 40%. And it's just too much. They're on the field too long. First and second down defense, strong, really strong, actually. And really first and second down run defense are strong, but they get in, they are not good at short yardage. They are not getting, it's weird because they get good penetration on first and second down. And then, if it's third and two, teams are running, are able to decrease them just enough to get 3 yards, or four. I think Youngstown State was 4 or 5 on fourth down. And so was, I think Northwestern was 4 or 5 or 4 or 6. And they're usually fourth and threes or less. And they're usually just run plays or quarterback sneaks. And they just can't quite get that last push to get off the field. So that is against athletes like you have in the heat that's going to be down there. I kind of worry about those bend don't break drives just breaking, because they just wear out.
I do wonder, because just, and you know what good cornerback play looks like at Michigan State, right? They've had some really good corners over the years. I don't know, like, this, just watching the Northwestern game, they don't necessarily look like the fastest quarterback group. Would you push back on that? The speed of that bunch?
They're pretty fast. What happened on the, so there were two long completions against Northwestern. One, the safety, what looks like a cornerback getting burned, is the safety didn't pick up the receiver, and the cornerback made up the time. And so that's just to indicate the speed. That was one of them. The other one was Ronald Williams getting burned, and that had to do with being a mismatch. I mean, he's a big, stronger corner. Right. He got put on a 5'10", 180 slot guy, and it just, it guy was just, he was actually just faster. Right. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily put Williams on, you know, Charleston Rambo or, right. you know, one of the, you know, you pick your matchup, you know, if you've got a 6'3", 210 pound, you know, possession receiver, maybe I'd give Williams a shot, you right. know, but they're both, I mean, Kimbrough's 6'1", 190 and Gervin's 5'11", 195. They're pretty solid.
Okay.
But they're not going to look, they're not first round picks either. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
And this, yeah, ball skills.
This game's probably going to be close, right? And so specialists matter in those type of games. How's Michigan State's kicking and punting game?
Thanks for having me. No, I'm kidding. It's been,
I honestly don't know. I haven't looked into it.
It's not great.
Okay.
So the, special teams are, so the linebacker coach is also the special teams coach. And those are okay. the two positions I've probably been hardest on or most nervous about going into the year. They did let Mike Trussell go to Cincinnati in the off season. And so, you know, it just makes me really nervous. So special teams, the starting kicker, Matt Coughlin, he is now handling kickoff duties, and he was okay. He's okay. But if the kick short, the coverage units are no bueno, period.
Okay.
I mean, it's been a frustrating issue for years. I saw it against Northwestern a little bit. And I think all the Youngstown State kickoffs went at the end zone, which is important. The punter is pretty good. Bryce Behringer is a fifth year senior. I think he was like 47 yards a punt against Northwestern.
Okay.
I think he did outkick his, but he outkicked his coverage once. And that's where you're seeing the, you know, the transfers come in and the roster upgrade, but the depth isn't there. And that really shows up on special teams. They have to use, you know, Jaden Reed is the starting receiver, and he's punt returner. And then Jalen Naylor, who's the other starting receiver, the two kind of the tandem there that's, you know, we think are pretty darn good players. He's the kick returner because there isn't that speedy freshman that could just take it, you know, and take those hits and stuff. And I'd like to see that actually, hopefully with this game, like not see the stars be expended because there's only so much depth that MSU has, which is, you know, remarkable in a short period of time, but not to where it needs to be. So, and I know your punter's fantastic. You got a freshman kicker that could apparently.
They're both good specialists, I think. And against Appalachian State, I liked what Tyreek Stevenson did at punt return. Kick return, it just seems like they're not even trying, quite frankly. So I don't know what to read into that. They just kind of take it at the 25. So
what happened on that kickoff return against App State?
Yeah, they said, you know, the coaches basically said they're playing a lot of freshmen, right, on those kick coverage units. Yeah. And instead of spilling them, they wanted to spill them inside, and they spilled them outside to the sideline. And he is a legit returner, that guy.
Oh, like, I know.
He's one of the fastest guys in the country. So he had a lane. And then, you know, too, the special teams coordinator brought up how, and look, it's hard to criticize a kicker for not being able to tackle, but he at least needs to affect the returner, right? Make him cut inside.
Right.
And he said, if the kicker at least makes him cut inside, they tackle him at the 40 yard line. And, you know, that's better than giving up the touchdown, of course. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was mainly just freshmen. Making freshman mistakes, kind of not understanding their jobs yet.
Well, you can rest easy that will not happen against Michigan State. It wouldn't matter. If you make a mistake, they might get the ball to the 26 instead of the 25. MSU hasn't had a return touchdown of any kind since 2014. It's a kick return, and they haven't had a punt return since 2011. It's been literally a decade since we've had it. So I don't think they're going to start now. I just don't think that's in the cards. What they do have, I know I've probably gone over, but just to tell the listeners, I went through the defense. The offensive scheme is kind of what I call just a kind of classic current modern spread. It's 11 personnel, one tight end, one running back. They are not applauding Big Ten six offensive linemen Wisconsin right. team. This is much more, it's not a finesse offense either. I mean, the O-line is, I think the skinniest guy is like 305 and most of them are old, like 315. I mean, they're big, big beefy guys and playing pretty well. You know, right tackle 6'7", 320. So, you know, not small, but they are, you know, one cut running instead of, you know, instead of power eye, they do use an H-back, like in lieu of a tight end, but it's kind of the same thing, right? Just lined up in the backfield. Former running back Connor Hayward is playing that position. He's interesting because he was a running back. He's 6'3", right. 235. Arguably the best hands on his team, on the team. He's got very, very like freakishly long arms for his size. So he looks like he's 6'2", even though he's 6 foot. And he's thrown some really strong blocks. So the edge blocking there, you get some power football out of a spread formation, but they'll go tempo. They are not going to use 38 seconds on the clock. They are going to look downfield. One thing that surprised me, you can tell me if this is part of Diaz's philosophy. I mean, I barely saw any downfield passing from either team against Appalachian State. I mean, is that just not something that you guys do, or is that, is the defense designed to take that away? Or
you're saying Miami took away App State's
both sides of the ball. Both sides didn't throw the ball down, barely threw the ball downfield. I saw almost no deep shots. Everything was underneath.
I think so in terms of Miami's defense, right? App State's quarterback, Chase Bryce.
Right. Clemson really guy.
Really struggles with pressure. And so I think the App State game plan was to get the ball out super quick. Mm-hmm. And so he did that all game long. Didn't, you know, nullified Miami's pass rush. So I think that, you know, they hit a little deep post late in the game. Miami, you know, I think what they connected on maybe one deep shot to Keyshawn Smith, number five.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, I will say this, it is a phase of the offense. It's like the one thing, honestly, that they've improved on from last year. Cause last year they couldn't connect on any, and they just couldn't connect on them. This year, at least if they don't connect on them, they've been picking up some pass interference penalties. So I agree. And I will say this too, App State honestly was playing a ton of drop eight. And so it was kind of, and that's why you saw in the second half, Derek kind of just say, I'm going to run the ball a lot, you know? So they took away the deep, they tried to take away the deep shots a lot. To me, the disappointing thing was, you know, when you drop eight and those quick passes are there, the wide receivers couldn't make that first tackle miss and then pick up yards after the catch. So to me, that's a big area that they need. And you're saying, you know, Michigan State will play kind of bend but don't break. They're going to need to do that this week, right? They're going to need to make a guy miss.
Yeah. And State's got pretty good safeties. Xavier Henderson is probably going.
He's an NFL guy.
Yeah, and he said that before the year that he wanted it would be his true senior year, even this is his fourth year, period, absolute terms of the program. And so I thought he'd be back next year, but he said before the year he wants to make this his last year. And he's been solid, but I didn't think he was an NFL player. Right? Last couple of games, I'm like, okay, well, better enjoy him while we can. He's really taking it seriously. Just very good. I think he's a mid-round guy, like maybe a fourth or fifth rounder. But I mean, it's a quality player back there. So it'll be interesting. I think the big plays are really going to, I think this game is going to turn on big plays. This doesn't have the feel of a methodical grinded out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, what do you think this game will look like? Cause I think the over under indicates the game might be in the 20s. I think I wouldn't be surprised if this game's in the 30s.
Yeah.
You know?
It's where I'm feeling. What I'm seeing from what I've seen so far from Miami is that you have a lot of athletes on both sides of the ball. I watched, I think you have a defensive end number 33. I think I looked him up. He's a freshman or redshirt freshman.
Yes.
And I watched him just make a terrible misjudgment, but then recover in a way. I'm just like, how does a kid move like that?
Yeah, he's very athletic.
Very athletic, but doesn't really know what he's doing yet, which is okay. And I've seen your linebackers, you know, several App State runs. I saw two linebackers in the same hole and things. I'm like, okay, well, you can exploit that. But then the flip side is I see I mean, just speed on the outside. I see, you know, your running back is a workhorse player. I mean, Cameron Harris.
Yep.
Harris. He can move. King is fast. I mean, he's fast, and he's going to be the first true mobile. Well, no, they played a dual threat against Youngstown State, but that doesn't matter. I mean, that doesn't count. So I can see this kind of trading big, you know, broken plays, but where
I think that potential, you know, is there. Yeah.
Yeah. I think where maybe your team discipline breaks down and Walker or Naylor or Reed or someone hits a big play, and where MSU just doesn't have, you know, maybe you have Rambo just get behind a corner because he's very fast and our guys are maybe just fast. And if you get out athlete, I think MSU can kind of live with that. I think the big difference in the game is Miami, at least from what I've seen, has a pass rush and really gets behind the line of scrimmage. MSU hasn't really faced a D line this, I will say, talented. Your D tackle number one, I think Silvera.
Silvera. Yep.
Yeah.
Jade Silvera. Yep.
Kid can play. I mean, that
was good against App State.
He was. And that kind of, it's hard to trust MSU's offensive line. You know, this is a real, if they do well, I'll be on their bandwagon the rest of the year, and the offensive line coach better make $1 million. But that's where I kind of see the difference. I think your pressure is more likely to affect Thorne than MSU is going to be able to get to King. Okay. That's kind of my concern.
The key,
there.
The key to the game, you think?
Yeah. I think I'm kind of meandering my way to a key to the game. I think that's really, that's where I think your biggest strength is right now. In based on what I saw for MSU, I think it's been the execution and discipline and the ability to, the few times they've had negative plays, forget about them. So even if they do take I don't think MSU has a glass jaw, which is why I think in the 30s or high 20s or something, I would see it much more, trading blows. But, you know, who knows? I mean, MSU's only turned it over twice, only forced one turnover. So, you know, that can make a close game seem pretty silly at the end. But I think between the tackles, between the hashes, I'm looking at Miami's got more raw talent. I would say MSU's probably better coordinated overall. I think, you know, MSU has a pretty clear philosophy on both sides of the ball. We were talking before the podcast. It's really kind of hard to understand what your offensive play calling is. The plays don't seem to build on each other or and you're kind of getting by on athletic ability alone. And so MSU, if they win, it'll be out execution and out discipline. And look, give State credit. This is not a team of two stars. I mean, they got 15, 18. They got some guys that can play. So that's why it's going to be a good game. I think, you know, I think the rankings are probably pretty accurate. I think we're both borderline top 25 teams this year. You know, maybe 8 win outfits, at least our starters as they are healthy today, are that quality. And so it should be a good game. I mean, I think you give the edge to the veteran quarterback and the home team. I mean, that's if I'm looking at this objectively, which I'm not because I'm a fan, but
from a Miami perspective, right. I think, and the fan base is wanting to know how this goes as well. Like, will the offense click? Cause I think you're exactly right about what's the identity of this offense right now. I can't pinpoint one at the moment, but I do think, you know, they've been playing at like a C- level, quite frankly. Yeah. And so, you know, if they take a step forward and play at a B level, you know, mm-hmm. that would be, and I think that's an attainable jump because they were shooting themselves in their own foot against mm-hmm. App State a lot of times with penalties and missed blown assignments on the offensive line. So we'll see if they can take that step. If not, Michigan State will win this game, I think. So I think you're spot on.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I do think your special teams edge shouldn't be discounted, though it's a little less of an issue for this kind of Michigan State team that's got the big playability to be backed up the same way App State was. I mean, really making App State go 80 plus yards is a little different. And not saying that MSU will get it all the time, but State's more likely to be able to pull off a 37-yard run or pass to kind of flip it back. I do think One thing that's kind of interesting, and I'm very curious about the turnovers, because MSU has not been as aggressive as I think they want to be. And I wonder if that gets changed in this game, if they start to bring it a little harder, and they kind of cut down the rotation a little bit, you see a little bit better communication. But it's an intriguing game. I wish that you guys could come back for a home series up in East Lansing, preferably in November.
I would have been
snowing.
Fun last year.
Yeah,
well, right. Like the cold weather.
We were joking when the season got delayed, maybe we could get you guys up here for Thanksgiving and right. see how you guys like 20 and blowing winds. But I've really enjoyed interacting with your fan base. I don't know what's going to happen with your coach. I know he's kind of embroiled right now. I think fans tend to value offense over defense, and I think your defense is probably pretty dang solid overall.
They haven't been the problem this year. It's been the offense, right?
So you're still 1-1.
Miami entered this year with expectations, and so that's always tough, right? When you're not going out of the gate meeting those expectations, you got to get the fans back on board with results. So we'll see if they can start doing that this week.
We'll see. We will see. Well, I just hope, honestly, both teams play hard, no injuries to anyone. Just see some good classic football.
Definitely. Andrew, one, thank you again, man. You were great. Definitely informed everyone, all the listeners, about Michigan State. I'm excited for this game, man. It's a big game for both programs. And should be a fun watch. Again, check Andrew's workout at the Press Quarters podcast. He said he's going to record his pod, I believe, tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow night. And so it'll be posted on, we're on iTunes and SoundCloud. It'll be up on tomorrow night or Thursday morning.
Okay, so check out his work there. Andrew, again, thank you, man. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.